From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Joey asks Aaron about being a neighbor, and Aaron asks Joey about becoming old.
Hello, this is what a Joey sounds like.
And this is what an Aaron sounds like.
And this is what a good neighbor, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
That was really neighborly. You're very neighborly as a human.
You know, really?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
I think the quality of your voice is particularly neighborly. Like neighborly. It makes me feel like, oh, neighbor.
It's like, oh, hello there, neighbor. How are you doing? Would you like some sugar scones I just made this morning?
Well, okay, that neighbor scares me.
I'll really
some sugar scones.
It's like Nedlet Flanders, I think. I don't know. It's nice.
This is a good entree.
Oh, I thought it was going to be a scooter of the Segway variety.
Oh, my.
Do you remember when they announced the Segway and it was like a big thing? What yes! is it?
Yes.
And it was like Good Morning America or like 2020. And he did like this Dean Kamen. It was especially relevant because he was from the town next to Manchester, New Hampshire, where I grew up. Yeah. And his company is in Manchester, New Hampshire. So we're like, what is it? It's going to put Manchester on the map. And then it was like, it's a scooter with handlebars. And, you know, you're going to see some strange tourists riding around on them. Anyways.
Everywhere. And they're always doing like, especially where our office is, just running into them. Just the hordes of Segway tourists running us
Segways?
Over.
Running around by our office?
One block south.
Wow.
Then they just sort of scoot through and it's like, get off my lawn, even though I moved here a year and a half ago. Yeah. And I don't claim this neighborhood. Anyway. Yeah.
So, neighbors.
Neighbors.
What are they? Do we need them? Do you like them?
Yeah.
Could we be better ones? These are the questions running through my mind. So I've been living in my neighborhood at home now for, I guess, like a year and a half or so. And, you know, previous to this, I'd been, you know, there was a point from like 18 to 30 maybe where I was moving almost every year, like in a new apartment for lots of different reasons. It was moving cities, grad school, college. Getting to the city and either being like priced out of an apartment after you lived there for 1 year or things like that. And this is the first time I've been static in a neighborhood that feels like people in the neighborhood have been there a while and that I'm sort of entering into their community. And I would use communities loosely, right? Like, I don't think that it's necessarily this cohesive thing, but there are people that have been there for a while. And I have a stupid face that
just, I don't think your face is stupid.
Just looks like, hey, talk to me, you know, or I guess I'm like non-threatening to look at. And I walk my dogs a lot and things like that. And so I see people and they're starting to get familiar with me. And I don't mind talking to them, but I have no idea how to be a neighbor at this point. Like, in my adult life, I haven't been one. I was a neighbor as a kid, and I had kids in my community and things like that that I knew. But I don't know how to be an adult neighbor, and I feel like it's an important thing that I'm just completely unaware how to operate within. So, Aaron, can you please tell me how to be a neighbor?
I giggle a little bit because I think that you in particular, I'm going to make this about you, are like one of the friendliest people I've met. And I say this having sat in the back of a cab in Baltimore with Joey for a ride to the train station. And within the 10 minutes that we're in that car, he and the Lyft driver have like bonded, connected, like they need to like exchange phone numbers and go have a drink. Like just the level of depth and the the social niceties that you skipped over in some of those types of conversations is something that I think supersedes a friendly face and goes straight to like, oh, you're a person who wants to talk about stuff. And, oh, I've got stuff to talk about. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, we learned like where his family lived and he was considering moving based on his relationship to Baltimore and the politics. And
yes, yes. And I think, so I think one of the keys to being a good neighbor is openness and willingness to connect. Because I think today, like at least in big cities in particular, there's a natural sort of like, let me not talk to the people who are around me all the time. Mm-hmm. There's almost like a bubble that you have to create around yourself just to stay a little bit grounded and sane when you think that you're, you know, standing on a subway with like 100 other people in a car next to you. You kind of have to go into your bubble and not want to talk to anybody in order to have any sort of mental alone space.
Yeah.
And that happens in our apartments too, where when you move in, you don't necessarily immediately get to know everybody. Maybe you pass in the hall, but like you're not going around like giving cookies to people.
Yeah.
True story. When I first moved to New York, I told my dad that I was going to go knock on the neighbor's door and give them cookies. And he was like, you've never lived in a city. Don't you dare do that. Don't you dare. And I was so scared that I never gave them cookies. Instead, we had really bad Russian vodka late one night. That's a different story.
I'm sorry, I'm mouth agape because the only times that I've ever actually really gotten to know my neighbors, which hasn't been many, many times, but it has definitely been through cookies. So I'm questioning everything now.
Well, your cookies are also better than my cookies and better than most cookies. Let's start there. It might have been my dad's indictment on my baking skills.
There's more far more that. Currency in Jess's cookies than Aaron's.
Oh,
cookies.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think like the part of it is, you know, the moving around a lot, you're sort of, I think we evaluate our investment, right? Like, is this person going to stay? Am I going to stay? Am I going to invest in a relationship that is like a year long? And can you make that relationship meaningful in a year, and what is meaningful, right? Like historically your neighbor, the idea of going next door to ask for a cup of sugar, right? Like there's a very low threshold of request for someone that you live near, right? Like a cup of sugar, the value of that is, you know, what we're talking 30 cents, 20 cents, something pretty insignificant. But the idea that you're knocking on the door and making a request, like there is still like, would you feel comfortable right now going next door and asking for a cup of sugar?
No, but well, actually, yeah. So weirdly enough, as I was coming in this morning, a woman that lives down the hall from me was waiting by the elevator, and she's the friendliest person on our floor for sure. And she was like, I was walking to throw out some trash. She's like, do you want me to hold the elevator for you? Like to go down together? And almost, especially in my like early morning foggy brained mind, I'm like, I don't want to talk to people. Wait a minute. Who are you? But then I'm like, right. You're just like a nice person.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something about non-committal niceness that that differentiates a neighbor from a friend.
Yeah.
Like I don't need and I don't really want, honestly, the person down the hall to be an invested friend that I have to create because I don't have enough time anyway for the friends that I've like developed over the past 25 years or so. So like, I don't want to then have to divert more time to this person that I don't know yet. And I don't know.
This is one of the things. So I was doing some reading about this because I was curious as we were going into this conversation, because it has genuinely been a thing that's pressing on my mind of how do I do this neighbor thing? And I think you bring up a couple points about the distinction between a neighbor and a friend. And is the neighbor less valuable? Like we're hearing all of this stuff about isolation and increasingly that people are feeling isolated, that it's having effects on mental health, you know, things like lonely together, or like these ideas that are permeating. And so I was reading up on stuff around neighbors and community and what's the value. And one of the things that came up was around friendship as it related to neighborhoods and, and like a local community and the effects of local community. And it was saying the way that you make new friends, and we hear a lot about people having difficulty making adult friends, like adult friends as a distinction of like even kind of youth and college age friends. And part of the way that you make friends, according to some psychologists, is repeated spontaneous interactions, like kind of cursory interactions, right? Like when new people start at our company right now, we're like 35 people range, somewhere in that vicinity. You're not going to be their best friend right away, but you're going to pass them in the kitchen or say good morning when they come in, or you're hanging your coat at the same time. And all of a sudden that frequency of like insignificant interactions builds up. And there is some weird distinction where like we're comfortable with it in an office place because it's just sort of part of the deal. But then when we go into a building in the city or a neighborhood, you're kind of having potentially a similar frequency of interactions, but I think we draw a line.
I actually am not so sure that we do. And I think in large part, it is because in New York or in Brooklyn, where I know the three of us live, it is in large part also about the like housing situation that you have. I know that between where I currently live in a walk-up building versus where my grandmother lives in Midtown, I feel more neighborly going to visit my Abu than I do with my own neighbors in my actual building, because there's that elevator moment where we're just standing and being like, oh, hello, hi. Well, you know, I'll get the door for you. You're carrying garbage or something like that, right? Like per Aaron's story. And maybe with dog walking, Joey, or, you know, maybe the kinds of things that you're doing are giving you more interface than you're used to in this living situation that you have this particular year.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, my brother in Chicago, like, freestanding house in a neighborhood, whenever I go to visit, I'm always blown away by how, like, friendly he is with his neighbors. And it's like, oh, Greg, you're mowing your lawn. All right. Good to see you. You know, and it's like,
oh, typical Greg.
Yeah. He's always got the John Deere out. John Deere does make very, very good
lawn. Inch and a half on the mower blade? Greg, come on.
You've definitely superseded me on my knowledge of of lawnmowers. I'm allergic to cut grass. It's a thing. But the frequent insignificant interactions happen when they move in, and now that they've got two kids, it's happened even more often because like the neighbors immediately next door always have their daughter and their grandchildren over, and so it's just like, oh, Susie and Sally are over. You know, there's room for that in a way that we don't have in a big city.
Yeah, and you know what else that brings to the discussion is this idea of like the first moment, right? When you first move in is, I think, a very telltale sign of what your neighbor situation is going to be like. True. Like, how neighborly are we going to be? If you see me struggling with a bunch of, you know, furniture pieces trying to get up to your new place and they don't offer to help you, it's like, oh, I see how it is.
Yeah.
All right. That's how it's going to be forever. As long as I live here, that's how this is going
to
be.
Yeah. There's sort of like you're trying to feel out what the set of mores are within a building or within a neighborhood or whatever. Like I did that recently. I saw this couple carrying in some IKEA furniture and they're a little older than me. Maybe they're in their like late 40s or mid 40s, and they were lifting this one piece, and there's a second one like over by the elevator, and they were like really struggling with this one piece, and I was going to like the garbage room or something, and so I just picked up the other one and brought it into their apartment, and I like knocked on the door and I was like ding dong, and because it was like kind of partially swung open, and I just put it in, and I was all of a sudden I got super scared. I was like doing a nice thing, and then I was like, oh, you didn't ask me to do this thing, and I just took it upon myself to help you, and maybe you're uncomfortable with this dynamic. And then I'd like open their door and put it in, and I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no. Yeah. I just broke the rules.
Yeah.
But they were like super appreciative, and it was like very positive, but I immediately was like, I didn't check to see if this was like an okay thing to be doing. I just like, here's your piece of IKEA furniture. And they were like, she's like, oh, what a mensch, what a mensch. And then I was like, all right, I'm leaving. Like, I didn't even stay to like talk. I was just like, here's your thing and bye.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I think there is like, you have to sort of like, you have to have a little bit of courage to test those mores if you actually want to be a good neighbor. Like, you have to compliment the lawnmower. You have to take the step of like moving the thing into someone's apartment. Like, all those things, you don't know what the rules are yet, and you sort of have to try it if you want to.
Yeah.
And I say if you want to, because not that I wouldn't help somebody who's struggling to get their stuff up to their apartment while they're moving in, but I'm thoughtful about the future of this relationship. I'm thoughtful about every time that I have to see them, and it's like, oh God, I've got to remember your kids' names. I've got to remember everything about you. I can't. This is the moment when I don't remember these things. This is when my mind turns off.
How's
oh God.
The little one?
I've come up with every euphemism for child.
Yeah.
Little one, kiddo, small guy, small fry.
Nugget. Like,
oh, Nugget's a good one.
Yeah.
But like, you know, some kids' names stick.
Yeah. There's some interesting innovations that I've seen around.
innovations,
whoa. You say?
Wow. innovation.
This is the Critical Nonsense innovation segment.
Yeah.
There was one of the articles I was reading, like digging into this, talked about this concept in Germany that's, I don't know whether it's like mainstream, but it is common enough that groups of people are doing this, where a group of people come together to build like a development that would normally, like a real estate developer would go in, and I don't know the size necessarily, but like, you know, 10 families or 20 families come together and they build these things called Baugruppen, which I think just means house group. But they're basically establishing their own group at the beginning to be like, we're going to be neighbors. Like, we're going to have some set of rules around like supporting each other, which feels like very German, right? Like,
what are the rules?
Yeah, it's basically like a housing co-op, but they're starting it from scratch and bypassing the developer. And, you know, in the developer case, right, like they're just building a generic set of homes that will, you know, be saleable, and they're adding 25% to 30% cost onto the top on the back end. So these people are actually working directly with the architects and builders. They're saving money from the developer, and they're getting to make decisions about how they want their like home group, their Bau group, to be, right? So they're doing like more green architecture and more choiceful structures for like building a courtyard in the middle, like an enclosed courtyard for kids to be able to play and things like that. And I thought that was really cool in, you know, having, even from the perspective of friendships, like if you wanted to have, you know, your group of friends that you play games with on weekends or whatever, that in the same space, like they're starting to be potential structures for you to be able to do that, which I just think is super cool.
Yeah. I think being a neighbor, the rules of being a neighbor start with whether or not you actually want to be a neighbor.
But we should be not for like being a great neighbor, but we need it as people.
We do. We gotta burst damn bubbles.
Support. Is this where we cut it?
Yeah.
Support.
And we're back from outer space.
Can we do this entire segment in old person voice?
Yes, we can. I don't know what the old person is. Yes, we can, children.
You end up sounding like
continental
that.
Accent, old person.
It's a little bit. You want to go down to the wing farm?
The wing farm?
It's where they keep the aeroplanes. Yes, I reckon. Jiminy Cricket, that his friend just left. But it is appropriate for this question. So I was talking to a friend who, he's a young guy, he's like 36, 37, and he became the de facto CMO of an ad tech company at the beginning of the year. And, we were talking a little bit about, you know, what it's like for him to be managing his team and what that experience is. And like the first thing out of his mouth was, I just feel old. Like I feel as though I am, you know, out of touch or out of sync, and that I don't quite understand how these youngins do things. And it's really confusing. And so for me, the big question that I started asking, and I asked this question a fair amount in general, is when are we old?
Today.
Oh, true.
Right now. I feel old.
Different old person.
Yeah.
I feel rather old.
My first reaction is that it's a state of mind type of idea, mm-hmm. right? I've met a lot of older people in their older, right, in mm-hmm. quotes, mm-hmm. in their 50s or 60s who, you know, are hip to the drive, who are trying to be young and to interact and to understand like the spectrum of what people are doing, both young and old, and who are like, they have their AARP card and their Instagram mm-hmm. account, you know? And so for me, it feels like it is a bit of a, like a state of mind thing that feels real, even despite the fact that it is a bit trite, a bit cliche. It feels true.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, like, I think there's an individual aspect to it, which is that one can feel old physically. One can think in an outdated manner or in an overly sort of like retrospective manner in terms of remember the days. And that can be totally different or separate from a feeling of like, I just want to try new things. I want to like grow.
Yeah.
Like, old and aging, I think, are different things. And I think that they're also different mindsets. I think the aging mindset is the one where you're like, all right, I'm doing the slow decline from here on out.
Yeah, this is reminding me of this amazing and very New York experience that I don't know if I've told you about, but I certainly have not talked about on the show, that I had a couple of months ago getting into a carpool. One of the carpool services.
Yeah.
Got in and meet this older looking man with a music case on his lap. And we get to talking, and he explains about how he has had a lifelong career as a musician and recently has been more shifting instruments to
dubstep.
Well, no, the horn to suit his difficulty struggling with his neurological disorder. And, you know, we go on and he's telling me about the struggles, but also about, you know, the successes of still being able to play. And it just sounds so amazing. And I'm like, wow, you know, how can I listen to your music? And he's like, well, you know, you can find me on Spotify or whatever. I was like, oh, my gosh, you're so ahead of your time. And he said the most profound thing in response. He said, well, it's my time, isn't it? I'm, you know, as long as I'm alive, it's my time. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is just the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. And it, you know, to him it was absolutely true, right? That you know, the ways that we've listened to music have changed does not necessarily mean that he needed to stick to the old ways just because he's been doing it a certain way his entire life. And that idea of aging as a state of mind, you know, there's obviously 100% ability for someone to try to keep up the best that they can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think like trying is a big part of it. Right. So there's also, you know, I'm thinking about your friend and saying, I feel old, right? Like, he is clearly still trying. If he's taking over this CMO role, he's like learning new things, tackling new challenges, like all of those things. And there's probably a distinction between the idea of trying to do new things and continuing to evolve and feel like you're in life, like you're not getting comfortable or static or any of those things. There's a different part of it of being able to relate.
Yes. Yes. Oh, and that's the thing that I think that's definitely the thing that he was talking about, right? Like there's an experiential divide, a life divide that starts to come up. And I think a lot of times it comes up in really small ways. It comes up in cultural references all the time. It's like that comment that comes out like, oh, do you remember this thing? And then you realize that someone didn't remember that thing because why would they remember it? That wasn't a part of their experience. And then there's like two choices that you can have to react to it. It's like, oh, there's a lot of reactions. These are, I'm super old, or like, you're such a baby, in that really annoying, infantilizing way that I think is incredibly demeaning and drives me crazy when people did it to me. And I try really hard not to do it to other people. And then there's also just like a silent appreciation that, oh, right, time happens.
Yeah.
Like, there are things that happened since gummy bears that like other people will know about better. And the moment is coming very soon where we start to have the nostalgic throwback to the Jonas Brothers is already happening right now. Like these things happen, and that evolution has to happen.
Yeah, there is, you know, the trying to relate thing is you have those divides in other parts of your life, right? Like you meet someone who lives in a different culture, but they're the same age as you, trying to relate. You're crossing a divide. And I think the age divide for some reason gets a little bit weirder. And I had an interaction recently where someone brought up the term cuffing. Do you know this term?
No.
See, you're old. Yeah. So it's a concept around dating someone from like Thanksgiving till Valentine's Day, where you're just like, you stay with the same person even though you're not in a relationship because whatever, it's cold and you're not going out or something like that.
More typically referred to as cuffing season. Usually it's appended season.
Historically, like when I was younger, people called it hibernating. Same concept. Exactly. Like the idea is not new, just the thing that you call it is new. And so for, you know, your 36-year-old CMO friend, he can probably relate to most of the things that those young kids are talking about. There are new things, right? Like maybe he didn't online date, or maybe he didn't, you know, do some sort of net new experience. But a lot of the experiences are the same. Like the human experience is more similar than different, right? Like you're trying to, you know, we're social creatures. You're trying to meet new friends. You're experiencing a new city. You're trying to grow your career. You're trying to find love. Like whatever, those things are the same. And just the way that we talk about them might change. And so like bridging that divide can make you feel old if you're not trying to bridge.
Yeah. I think the ability to relate, the desire to relate is a very, I don't know, it's pure. Like it comes from a place of like just connection and wanting to connect. I feel like there's even like the conversation about neighbors, it's very similar. You want to figure out the common ground because that's fun. That's where you get to play like social volleyball. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also a social reality that, and this is a big issue in the tech industry, in the advertising industry, and in our culture at large, which is that old is pejorative. It's seen as pejorative. Like it would be wrong to say that the advertising industry, the tech industry aren't dealing with issues or haven't dealt with issues of ageism like consistently, you know, and there are conversations that are happening at Google and at other Silicon Valley firms, big and small, that basically start to turn that really amplify the issue of we put people out to pasture when they're in their 40s and say, you can't relate. You can't understand.
Yeah.
We need the freshest, newest ideas. And people do get left behind. Like it's a real thing. And I think it's important to acknowledge.
Yeah. It was John Oliver episode last week. And it was talking about the way that our relationship to our careers is going to be shifting based on automation and all of these things, that people aren't going to have a career. They're going to have like cycles of their career, that they might have like five different careers in the future. Like my daughter may not have one career path. She'll do this thing for a while. And then that job is automated out or becomes less relevant and she has to shift to a new career path. And I think things like that, where you're the nature or the structure of the world means that you're gonna have to be forced to relate more, might change things. But it comes back to trying a lot of times, right? There, I've seen people who, you know, I'm thinking you bring up advertising, and because we're sort of adjacent, we either have friends in advertising or like sort of next to that community. And I've seen people in my experience who stop trying and get to 45 and are just not in the culture anymore. And it's a culture industry fundamentally. Mm-hmm. It's about culture and whether you're immersing and understanding what is happening in culture.
A culture industry that fetishizes youth. Yeah. Do you want to throw that in there?
Yeah, too? I agree. And I've seen people who are like, I'm a dad now. I'm middle-aged. I'm just showing up to do my strategy with my structure, abstract of anything. And then I met someone at a wedding this year who, if I had to guess, is probably about 55. Mm-hmm. He is a strategist at some agency in London and has like a young wife and is like out trying to, I mean, he quit smoking and started vaping, and like he is, you know, like not your typical guy, but he's just like hungry to understand how the way the world works. And he is very successful still as a strategist. He's not like running the agency. He's like, I'm a strategist. I'm doing the work. I know what the kids are doing. I'm, you know, I understand the spectrum of experience and I'm in it. And I think that distinction of whether you stop trying to understand or whether you continue being like, what are the kids doing? I'm not trying to be a kid, but I can understand those things. Like, it changes.
And I guess there's one way of looking at it where it's like, oh, that guy, what a cool guy. Like, what a cool old guy who's like trying to keep up with the times and succeeding at it. But I think something that Aaron sparks for me with the story about your friend is when it is not necessarily about that person and their ability, but when it's about sort of the expectation of that person just because they are old.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so it's not even like they can try their hardest and that still might not be enough because they look old. So how could they possibly be that cool or, you know, that culturally aware?
Yeah. And that's where this article that I was sending around to these guys, being Joey and Jess, these guys,
yeah.
In the New York Times, that was about a retreat called Modern Elder. And it was started by an ex-Airbnb exec who, you know, basically woke up one day after years of being called, you know, the elder in their offices and started a retreat for people in their 30s who were starting to have a shift in mindset and were trying to deal with being treated as old in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you also have conversations that are happening in financial service firms like crazy about how retirement is going to be stretching out and out and out, and that essentially what we think of as retirement is going to start turning into that cyclical career. It's going to be future careers that we didn't even know that we had that are going well into our 80s and 90s and potentially even hundreds. And so all of these different life stages or socially created interrogation chambers about age that are popping up really make this question about relating, how much you want to relate, and the degree to which others are going to set unreasonable expectations on your capability and insightfulness.
Yeah.
Like, it's just going to get it's going to be coming into the forefront more.
I feel like there is what it meant to get old before what is different now, like both just in sort of the degree of longevity that people are going to be facing is far longer. And the people we only have to look 10 years older than ourselves. The experience that those people had growing up with the elders in the world, in their community, was different. Like, you retired at 62 because you weren't expected to live much longer than that, right? And so the mindset is you're getting closer to, you know, taking your final break and relaxing before it all ends. And that's just not the reality anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think there's when you're expecting that you're going to be dying soon, which, not to make it morbid, but if that's your mm-hmm. expectation, you're saying like, I'm going to, you know, like slow this engine down, right? Like, and start to chill out and embrace other things. I'm wondering what our generation will define the aging process and mm-hmm. what will value. In particular, I'm thinking about, right, like I have friends who are actively choosing not to have children. Mm-hmm. What it means to be 45 without kids in a professional environment is very different than the historical idea of what it meant to be 45 in a professional environment with kids. Mm-hmm. And what do we expect of, in quote, older people and all of these things? I feel like there is a cultural component to how we decide to age. You have the flip side of people who are saying, I want to retire at 40.
Right. Exactly. Right? Yeah. And that's exactly what I was going to say, is like, there's almost there's a previous mindset that is, let me do the sad stuff now because I have a few years of happy later. And there's more and more of a conversation about, I want to balance my happy and doldrums at the same time. Like, I want to be able to do work that I'm proud of and that I'm happy about, that makes me happy, so that I don't lose time, so that I don't, you know, wait for something that I might not even have enough money or, you know, a physical capability to be able to experience as much as I'd like to. And like, modern medicine is amazing, but until we get the like Ellen Ripley alien exoskeletons at like 102, like, I'm going to spend as much time making sure that I spend time with family and friends now rather than waiting until later.
Boston Dynamics, they're making those things.
That is true.
And that dog that you kick.
Yeah. Oh, no.
The robot dog that they're just always kicking and hitting with doors and making it slip on banana peels.
Not so a real dog. It's a robot dog.
Really important clarification.
Has no head.
I thought it had a head.
No, it just has legs in the front and back.
It's super weird looking.
That's weird. Boston Dynamics.
We'll post pictures.
Yeah. Stop kicking the dog.
Stop kicking the dog.
You can make a trip on banana peels. We're totally cool with that.
I love that. When are we old? Stop kicking the dog.
Fiddle-a-dee-doo-doo.
Bow.
Critical Nonsense is the Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in beautiful New York, New York.
As always, we'd like to thank executive producer and old young or young old Jess Vander.
We'd also like to thank sound engineer and great neighbor Alex Gunta.
We'd like to thank designer Nora Mesterich for being the queen of high fives.
We'd also like to thank our production team, Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vong.
And as always, thanks, Alan.
Appreciate you.
I have special thanks.
What's your special thanks?
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you. I couldn't remember his name.
Thank you for just being a good neighbor.
Oh, I haven't cried yet because I haven't watched the documentary.
Oh, man, that was a good one.
Ooh, I want to thank the makers of that documentary for giving me a real good trailer cry.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Someone also, good neighbor, never got old, stayed young at heart.
Also true. And Cardigan Game on. Yes.
The kids say fleek?
You heard me stop myself from fleeking.
I'd like to thank State Farm.
Like a good neighbor.
I would like to thank
letting him go. I like that.
I would like to thank Wilson from Home Improvement.
I'd like to thank that fence.
The fence game was on fleek.
Absolutely.
And what not even the young people, also probably the old people know is that there's also a fence reference going on with The Bachelor right now.
Oh, right.
Also relevant, but that was about fence jumping in Portugal.
I'd like to thank that fence too. Might as well.
While we're on the subject of thanking fences.
Colton could he was sprinting. He was leaping. It was amazing.
Top five fences, chain link.
I'm going to go with plywood.
Picket.
Cottage perimeter.
Cottage perimeter. Underlooked number three on fences for sure.
I agree. Denzel Washington.
Sound barrier.
I'm just saying, it was the movie. It was
hidden fences. What is it?
No. Well, there were
hidden figures.
There was hidden figures
and just fences.
And fences. And I should have thanked Viola Davis.
I'd like to thank Denzel Washington. for doing different mouths in his real life versus in his movies.
That's fair.
I don't know how that works.
It's really CGI. Really good CGI.
They just extend his lip down with CGI. It's
Wait, ooh. I just out of nowhere want to thank Jennifer Lewis. Just because I can. That's all.
Jennifer Lewis?
She's incredible. Just Google and live your best life. And then look up her and Brandy doing a delightful sing-along.
Go sing.
I'm not gonna sing it. It's a little, it's got some language. It's got some language.
Language.
But it's
just
quite
a sing along that's just like FSH.
I like that. That's
just fish.
We've cursed so many times on this podcast, and now I'm getting cagey. But you know, I'll save it for some other time.
No.
There I did it. Why?
I'd like to thank swear words and pirates and sweaters.
I'd like to thank you guys because this podcast is over. Bye now.